Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Friday, July 20th, Chicago, Illinois. Hello again, along with Max Armstrong and a few other folks, I'm Orion Samuelson, coming together to once again cover the story of markets from Wall Street to wheat to cattle and to hogs. We do this every week at this time, and we always appreciate your joining us for some of what we have to share with you. And markets are never dull for whatever reason, and that was the case again this week. But let's look at the final day of trading today on Wall Street. Stocks ended slightly lower as escalating trade anxieties driven by President Trump's latest tariff threats against China offset a string of some pretty strong earnings led by Microsoft. The Dow Industrial Average posted its third consecutive weekly gain, while the S&P 500 also rose for a third straight week after eking out a gain for the period. But shares of Microsoft hit a record high, ended the session up 1.8% on the heels of a strong second quarter earnings report. The company narrowed the race with Apple and Amazon in the race to be worth $1 trillion in market value. Microsoft's advance today provided the biggest support to the S&P 500 and to the NASDAQ. All of this despite the fact that President Trump said he was ready to impose tariffs on all $500 billion of Chinese imports. That's the latest artillery fire in a series of protectionist moves that have prompted retaliatory measures from U.S. trading partners around the world. Long-dated U.S. government bond yields rose on worries the president's comments would encourage Fed Chairman Jerome Powell to slow the pace of rate hikes by the U.S. Central Bank. That could increase the inflationary pressure. But for the day, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 7.5 points, ending at 25,057. The S&P 500 index closed down 2.5 points at 2801.90, and the NASDAQ closed down 6 points at 78.19. And for the week, the S&P 500 rose just a little bit, 0.02%. The Dow added 0.15%, and the NASDAQ shed 0.07%. A little bit of a surprise to me, at least, that with all the geopolitical news and the blustery attacks on each other, there wasn't much change in the U.S. market activity this week. Oil prices today, as a weakening dollar and lower expected August crude exports came into the market, moved higher. And Saudi Arabia supported the market, offsetting concerns about U.S.-China trade tensions and supply increases. The expiring U.S. crude for August delivery settled up at $70.46 a barrel, while the September contract rose 2 cents to $68.26. Brent crude settled up 49 cents, ending the week at $73.70 a barrel. Now, as we look ahead to next week, there's a lot on the earnings report schedule and on the economic calendar. Let's look at the economic calendar first of all. The highlight coming on Friday, Commerce Department's advanced second quarter GDP, gross domestic product report, and comprehensive revision to prior data, as well as methodology improvements to address the issue of residual seasonality. According to a Reuters survey of economists, gross domestic product likely increased at a 4% rate in the second quarter, following a 2% pace of growth in the first quarter. On Wednesday, the Commerce Department will likely report that new home sales fell 2.8% to a rate of 670,000 units in June. And then data on Thursday from the Commerce Department expected to show durable goods orders rebounding 2.8% in June after slipping 0.4% in May. So then what about some of the earnings reports? Well, AT&T, the number two U.S. wireless carrier, expected to report an increase in profit in the second quarter on Tuesday. And investors will also be looking for comments on the Department of Justice appeal of the ruling that allowed AT&T to buy Time Warner Verizon Communications, the largest U.S. wireless company, expected to post an increase in its second quarter profit on Tuesday. And Merck & Company expected to report an increase in second quarter profit on Friday of next week as its blockbuster cancer drug, Keytruda, gains traction. Investors hoping to see a diversification in Merck's business will be looking for updates on the company's pipeline products and comments on any other activity that they're putting into play. Amazon.com expected to post an increase in second quarter sales driven by solid growth in its cloud computing and retail businesses on Thursday. Analysts also expect its successful Prime Day sales to boost sales numbers. Wednesday, Facebook expected to report an increase in second quarter profit as the social networks, mobile and business continue to benefit from businesses spending ad dollars online, particularly on video ads. On Friday, Twitter expected to report an increase in second quarter profit as more advertisers from markets outside the United States are embracing Twitter's video ads. U.S. cable provider Comcast Corporation expected to report an increase in revenue and profit on Thursday, helped by customer additions to its internet service. Plane maker Boeing Company expected to report an increase in second quarter revenue and profit on Wednesday as it benefits from strong demand for air travel. And investors will look for an update on full-year financial forecast. Lockheed Martin Corporation also expected to post higher revenue and profit for the second quarter on Tuesday. Then we turn to the auto companies. General Motors and Fiat Chrysler will report second quarter results on Wednesday. Investors will be watching for commentary on the impact of the trade tensions between the United States and China, along with the steel and aluminum tariff situation and the state of new vehicle sales in the U.S. market. Ford Motor Company scheduled to report second quarter results on the same day, and also this coming week, Harley-Davidson will release its second quarter earnings on Tuesday. Another well-known name in the technology world, chipmaker Intel Corporation, expected to post an increase in revenue and profit, helped by strength in its data center business. Coca-Cola's quarterly organic revenue is expected to get a boost from higher North American sales and demand for Diet Coke. Colgate-Palmolive, the world's largest toothpaste maker, expected to report an increase in second quarter earnings on Friday. And Chipotle Mexican Grill expected to report a rise in comparable restaurant sales in the second quarter, helped by higher menu prices, while investors will also look for any future plans that will be coming from the new CEO. Google's parent company on Monday, that's Alphabet, expected to post an increase in its second quarter profit, helped by strong growth in ad sales on Google Search and YouTube. Toy maker Hasbro is expected to report a drop in second quarter revenue as the company continues to grapple with the collapse of Toys R Us, while profit margins may be hurt by higher freight and commodity costs. And so, all in all, another busy week on the economic data calendar and on the economic earnings reports. We'll be back to talk about grain markets as Max Armstrong sits down with Bryce Knorr of Farm Futures Magazine to talk about agriculture and the impact of the trade wars. Coming up when we continue on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
In the studio with us this weekend, grain market analyst Bryce Knorr with Farm Futures. It's been a while, and it's good to see you back.
Well, good to see you, Max.
The last time we talked, we weren't looking at the depths of a market that's been under pressure the way this one has for the past couple of months. We're not seeing much sign of life at the moment, are we?
Well, I think there are some positive indications, particularly for wheat, maybe for corn. And I think you can make an argument that soybeans, if they haven't made a bottom, they don't have a terrible lot of downside to them. Whether or not they have much upside is really going to depend on yield. But the world wheat situation, it's tightening. The stocks-to-use ratios of the major exporters is basically as low as it's ever been in history, at least dating back to the 1960. That's the data I have. So there's hopes that that's kind of going to elevate wheat prices around the world, and that'll lift our market as well.
Refresh our memory. What has helped bring this wheat supply in line with the demand? Crop problems?
Well, crop problems here in the U.S., the farmers are just planting less wheat historically. But we have an average crop, average sort of yields, but lower acres. And around the world, France had too much rain, kind of spoiled some of their crop. Mm-hmm. It's been very dry in Germany up through the Baltics. They produce higher protein wheat, and so they have a short crop. And then even going down to the Black Sea area, Ukraine, Russia, they're having some problems as well. Not a total disaster by any means, but just lower production, lower acres. But the big place with a target on it right now is Australia due to the developing El Nino. Farmers planted their crop in May into some of the driest soils in memory. So it looks like they're going to be having a short crop.
And they are, in most years, a major wheat exporter.
Right. And, of course, it's a small country, not a lot of people. They don't eat much wheat, so they have to export it.
What's your feeling about the wheat acreage in the United States? Will our growers, especially of the soft red wheat, the hard red wheat in the plain states, first and foremost, will they boost acreage this fall?
I think they probably will, just because it may be the best of a bad lot, and they may think that the wheat market, when it starts trending higher, tends to keep going for a couple years. So I think people may be encouraged by that. The guys with cattle, the price isn't good, they can always just graze it out and get some forage that way as well. So they have a few alternatives there. It's also going to depend on moisture. It's been very dry in parts of Kansas, and that's they're shriveling up their corn and soybean crops in those areas. So it may depend on whether or not they get those August-September rains. Typically, they do in these El Nino fall years.
Since you're talking about dry weather, that dry area of eastern Kansas extends over into western Missouri, northwest Missouri. Very dry there, I know. Give us a feel for the Corn Belt at this stage of the game and what the moisture looks like out there. Are there other dry pockets? How significant is the dryness? How significant has the heat been in perhaps taking some of the top off of the corn yield?
Well, that dry pocket from eastern Kansas over really to western Illinois, but the ground zero is in Missouri, their crop has been devastated. We do have a feature called Feedback from the Field. Farmers file their reports. So people have been talking about that now for a while.
I think, what, a fourth of the Missouri corn crop is rated poor or very poor now.
Right. Just in the past week, my yield estimate dropped 14 bushels, which is a startling drop.
For the state of Missouri.
Yeah, for the state of Missouri. Other places like Iowa, the crop overall is decent, but some places are too wet, some places are too dry, and that's kind of a pattern around the Corn Belt. Michigan has been dry. They're one of the top 10 producers, so looks like their yields are going to be down. Illinois, by and large, except for that those few dry areas, looks like they're going to have a bumper crop. And when you start moving up into the northwest part of the Corn Belt, Minnesota and the Dakotas, things look very good. So they're going to, looks like the yields up there could offset some of the problems elsewhere.
So the Dakotas are in pretty good shape then.
Right. They have a lot of green on the vegetation health index maps, but we have kind of a dichotomy. The crop ratings have been coming down that USDA puts down every week on
Monday. Which
you
would expect this time of year.
Right.
They usually do start.
Typically they – and then right around now they either keep going or they turn higher. Now, I also look at the vegetation health index, and I have a model that estimates corn and soybean yields based on that. And the corn yields have been, they've been saying the yield maybe 171, 174, basically about average, where those crop ratings are still 177 to 180. So I think we're going to find out here pretty quickly just which way this corn crop is going, and that could have a big impact on prices.
After the experience of 2017, how much do you correlate the weekly crop rating reports with the yield of the corn crop?
Well, by October, they actually do a fairly good job. Early in the year, there's a lot of error still baked into the model, so you have to take that into account.
But when we got the August report last year, we got a surprise, did we not?
Right, and then the yield kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Remember, we wound up with, what, over 176 bushels per acre, an all-time record yield. Some years the crop ratings do a good job, other years not so much. It's one of the ways that I look at just what's happening to the crop. Again, we use the vegetation health index models. At the end of July, we'll be able to crank numbers into a weather model that does a pretty good job. And then we also ask farmers for their yield estimates, both in our surveys and in this feedback from the field feature, which actually came fairly close, but you had to wait for corn. You had to wait until farmers actually harvested the crop in October, November, and then they were able to give an accurate assessment. Early on, farmers tend to be very conservative. Everybody's growing 150 bushel corn. By the time they get it in the way wagon, in the bin, it's up to 200.
Many were pleasantly surprised last year, realistically. Not just a low-balling estimate, but many were genuinely surprised, were they not, Bryce?
Right. We had a long period for grain fill, and that could be, that's one of the things that kind of people are chattering about now with the fast development of the crop. If the crop keeps on developing, that may shorten the grain fill period. Now, looks like the forecast into early August is kind of cool, but a little dry. That may extend that grain fill. Most places have pretty good soil moisture. So it's still kind of a jump ball as to which way this is going to trend. The market will pay a lot of attention to USDA's August 10th crop report that features the results of their first survey of farmers in the field.
When will you come out with your number prior to the August report?
Well, we're doing our survey right now, so we will be reporting that August 3rd. Give everybody about a week heads up on just what USDA may say.
In your mind, where's the corn yield now? What are you thinking? What have you been talking?
I'm thinking probably about average, probably about USDA put it at 174. I'm a little lower than that, 172 and change. Right now, I think that's probably where we're at.
Is the trade thinking a little higher than that?
The trade has been looking at the crop ratings. So they started off, more 180 plus. They're starting to come down a little bit, I think. And you're just starting now with the noise about trade starting to calm down a little bit, people are really starting to focus on the yield number, which is something they typically obsess about much more, but we've been distracted.
Is it too early to talk about a soybean yield, knowing how much that crop can get a boost in August or be hurt in August by developing dryness that continues to worsen in any particular area?
Well, we can talk about it. Now, the talk may not mean anything because soybeans are so notoriously difficult to predict. The crop ratings have a lot of error baked into them for soybeans. Until,
at this stage of the game.
Right, until we get to really into late August, September, October. Then they do a fairly good job. Right now, they only account for about 30% of the variability in the final yield, which is statistically significant, but not good at all in terms of trying to figure out where the yield is at. I'm figuring the yield is probably 50 bushels per acre right now, but a lot can change.
That would be an average yield, would it not?
Yeah, that would be probably a little above average. And if we do get to 50, that would be 6 years in a row of above average yields.
You mentioned just a minute or so ago that the trade tariff talk has calmed down a little bit. It is not the market factor now, or it's not moving the market the way it was as the market was falling?
Well, we just haven't had any headlines break on it for a little while. Of course, as soon as you say that, something will happen,
right,
and it'll come back into the headlines. So it's kind of like lightning or waves. When they crash, and then they recede for a little bit, and we can kind of focus on the stuff that we normally talk about.
Is the bearishness not all factored in already? I mean, how much more could the markets fall based on trade war talk?
Well, the USDA put the bottom of its average cash price range, July 12th, was $8.
That was surprisingly high to some folks.
Well, you know, you can. I think you can probably talk futures with a $7 handle at some point if the crop does come in, say 50 bushels per acre. I think we'll probably go down there and test that. But we're still going to be selling a lot of soybeans. People around the world are still going to need them, and we're still dealing with the after effects of the short crop in Argentina.
It is always a pleasure to get the marketing wisdom of Bryce Knorr, Senior Grain Analyst at Farm Futures Magazine, and we look forward to his thoughts on the market. More to come when we continue on the market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
USDA came out with an important report today, the monthly cattle on feed report. And some of the highlights: ranchers last month sent 1.3% more cattle to feedlots than a year ago, making it the most for the month since 2006. The July 1st cattle on feed was the most on record for that period since USDA began tabulating the data in 1996. Most of the placement increase, driven by lightweight cattle, which in some measure is due to deteriorating pastures because of dry weather. Feed yards also sent cattle to market in a timely fashion to avoid lower prices amid a projected supply buildup, which could mean fewer cattle later this year. Analysts call the report neutral for live cattle futures when trading opens on Monday. The USDA report showed June placements at 1,793,000 head, up from the 1,770,000 a year earlier. The government put the cattle feedlot supply as of July 1st at 11,282,000 head, up 4.3% from a year ago. And USDA said the number of cattle sold to packers, the number of cattle marketed, up almost 1% in June from a year ago, at 1,989,000 head of cattle. And also today, the government issued the semi-annual cattle inventory report. How many cattle do we have in the United States? Well, the report showed the July 1st U.S. cattle herd at 103,200,000 head, and that's up slightly from a year ago. Highlights of the cattle on feed report: traders not expecting a lot of reaction to it. Weather not only affected some crops this year, but also had an impact on agricultural industry. A tornado in the area of Marshalltown, Iowa, shut down the JBS pork packing plant in Marshalltown today. A spokesman for the company said, "We are not running the plant today as we assess the damage and allow our team members time to tend to their families and personal concerns because of a tornado that touched the town on Thursday." Marshalltown is the only packing plant affected, and they'll be down at least until Monday. The plant has a daily capacity of processing 20,000 hogs per day. And then there was the other story that, again, showed the challenges facing the agricultural community. That one from Oregon, where they are fighting some gigantic wildfires destroying the wheat crop about to be harvested in Oregon. The report that we got yesterday, a blaze about 85 miles east of Portland has scorched nearly 80 square miles of wheat since igniting on Tuesday. The largest of more than 200 wildfires across Oregon, many sparked by lightning. And the sad part of it, well, it's all sad, but a man's body was found Thursday near a homeless camp inside the perimeter of another fire that burned earlier in the week in southwestern Oregon. So Mother Nature, well, probably people as well, making an impact thanks to tornadoes and to wildfires. So what happens when the market opens next week on Monday? What do we find? We'll find the livestock futures at the Mercantile Exchange starting in the October contract at $51.27 a hundredweight. The August live cattle contract will start the week at $108.92. And that is the only line in my livestock report that's green. The rest of them are red. The August feeder cattle contract will start the week at $153.45. What about the grain market? Well, there is concern about getting that wheat crop up to a little higher level because of bad weather in the Baltic and the Black Sea and in Australia. And so September wheat will start the week at up 11.25 cents a bushel at 516. And the September corn will start at $3.55 and a quarter cents, up 3.25 cents for the week. December corn, incidentally, will start at 369. August soybeans will start the week at 849 and three quarters. November beans will start at 864. And three quarters. That's a look at the world of business and agriculture. Thank you for joining us. Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on the Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.